Hi, everyone. This is Bob Sorrentino from Italian Roots and Genealogy, and I think we're going to have a really fun show today with some great podcasters and some great guests. So just to do a quick introduction, we have Frank DiPiero from Keeping It Real with Frankie D, Steve Mancini, and Claudio Rossono from Italian Impact Weekly, Rich Leto, Carla Paterno, Diana Oliveri, Dan Zangroni, and Rebecca Clemente. So welcome, everybody. Thanks for being here. We're going to start with asking a question here and there, and I'm going to host for a while, and I'm going to turn it over to our other podcasters. And I want to start with Frank DiPiero and ask Frank, because I know you do a great show, a great piece, the Italian-American Moment, I believe it's called. So who is your hero, Frank?
My hero? I didn't even think of that. You mean as a kid growing up?
As a kid, yeah, growing up.
I mean, for some reason as a kid, I really always liked Dean Martin. I have to admit that. I loved Frank Sinatra, but I always had this thing about Dean Martin. I just, maybe because he was so cool and, just everything he did, I really liked him. I liked his music. I liked his movies. I liked everything about him.
Yeah, he was fun. Carla, how about you?
Oh, gosh. As a child, my hero, I'd like to say it was somebody Italian. I'd like to say it was somebody in my family. The honest truth, it was Marie Osmond.
Dan, how about you?
Well, being raised in America, I mean, I loved cowboys. You know, cowboys were the coolest guys on the planet at that time. But going back to Dean Martin, my uncle would sing and he'd sound just like him, you know. So, yeah, I mean, I loved the way his voice sounded, too.
You know, I'm going to be a little bit corny here, perhaps. And I thought about it and I came up with my dad. And I'll tell you why. My dad was the guy that everybody went to in the family. Whether it was my mom's family or his family, if something went wrong, that's the guy that he called. If somebody needed a lawyer, or if somebody needed a mortician, if somebody needed anything, he was always the first one that he called. And he would drop everything to go there, you know. Becky, how about
that's
you?
Great. No, this was a tough question for me because I don't think about that I maybe even had someone I would call a hero when I was a child. I mean, now as an adult, I certainly admire the veracity and fortitude of my grandparents to make the journey here and think about how pivotal that was, not only changing their lives, but also the rest of us that came, you know, after as well.
And they were really true heroes for sure. Steve, how about you?
So yeah. I'm going to be out in left field here. Becky, I kind of think like you did. I was a hero is a tough question because there's different stages in your life where different people mean something to you. And when I was growing up, as funny as this sounds, Sylvester Stallone, because I remember as a really young kid watching Rocky for the first time. And that's kind of, to me, the first time a movie ever, for lack of a better term, kind of positively glorified Italians. I mean, what was his nickname? The Italian Stallion. I mean, tell me when they did that in a movie or a show. You know, Italians to this day are always seen as, you know, let's just say not necessarily in a positive light. But I can literally word for word, Rocky 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, his Rambo movies. I mean, that was my guy right there. Sly was always my favorite.
Deanna, how about you?
It's a really hard question. I've been trying for the last few days to try to think of a good answer. And I mean, I loved Grease, Olivia Newton-John growing up. I don't know if I would say she's my hero, but I watched the movie every day. So I was really into like music and kind of like in a almost worshiping those type of things. And of course it wasn't anything Italian. And also I liked Blondie. I had all the videos of me singing and screaming my head off. So as a kid, I mean, I really wasn't thinking about like, oh yeah, my grandparents came over on the ship and suffered and, you know, all this stuff. And I didn't think about that as a child. So yeah, probably now as an adult, I'd say my parents and my grandparents and, you know, my ancestors before them too.
Claudia, how about you?
That question, my mom and dad. there's an old Italian saying, if you ever see a turtle on top of a fence post, you know he didn't get there alone. Wherever it is I'm at in my life, if it was not for my parents' love, support, belief, and trust and hard work, there's no way in hell I would have the life that I have. My dad went through an awful lot in his life, as did my mom. But they overcame all of those obstacles to make sure that I had what I needed, had what I wanted. And absolutely to this set, and Steve allows me after every show that we do to end the show. And I always thank my mom and dad. So without question, I have a lot of people that have inspired me, a lot of former athletes that I study and I learn from. But without question, my mom and my dad, Olindo, and my mom, Ida. We named my daughter after my mom. So, and I try to honor my parents with tournament games, with, you know, all kind of things. I'm always honoring my parents because I truly adored my parents and they adored me.
Yeah, that's a great answer. Rich, what did your Italian family members, grandparents teach you about family, work ethic, life, et cetera?
You hit on the word. It's the familia and that whole web, starting with the grandparents, those immigrants. But it was like my aunts that were like my second mother, or my second grandmother, where we would gather, obviously, on Sunday. And things that I remember about is my grandmother always handed me like a dollar bill as soon as I would get in her house, squeeze my hand and just hold it so tight and not let me go. But it was definitely family values, you know, respect when you see your aunt, call her Aunt Rose, Uncle Mario. Yeah. Today, you might not hear that aunt or uncle, you know. Just an embrace our culture and tradition. So I'm very thankful for having that with me, heritage and tradition, and continue as much as I can.
Yeah, on the 15-minute drive from my house to my grandmother's house, my mother must have told us 10 times, go kiss your aunt. Make sure you kiss your aunt. And yeah, go there, do this. Don't say that. I see Steve, you're laughing. So you went through the same thing, huh?
I may have been told once in a while to, you know, go give a kiss or go give a hug, and you're all right, you know.
You can then get the lipstick on.
you know the irony is, and I think you all agree with this, and I'll say this. When all those people are gone now, you would give almost anything to have that moment to go give them a kiss.
Yeah,
definitely.
What you don't appreciate when you're younger.
They seem to know that because they would just kind of grab you and kiss you whether you liked it or not.
And so, you know, kind of, you know, I did the same with me. It was my uncles. My uncles taught us work ethic. They were all hardworking men and everything like that. And all my uncles, all my aunts and uncles are gone now. Show of hands. You still have aunts and uncles, parents alive?
Uncles.
Just my mom. My mom is 93.
Fantastic.
I have an aunt that just turned 100 and her brother turned 90 this year.
My great aunt just died at 100 last year.
So, Dan and Deanna, now you guys live in Italy part-time, full-time. Is it the same? Do they have that same kind of ethic?
Yeah, it's really family-oriented. In fact, sometimes Sunday can be a little bit lonely because everyone's with their families. It depends where you live. I mean, in Naples, there's a lot of stuff going on. But where I was before, it would be – I moved because of this depressing thing that would happen on Sunday. Everything's closed in a small town, and everyone's with their family. And you're just like, all right, well, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
And like,
no, that's, you know, maybe true. Yeah, that's very, very true. And it's not even Sunday. It's actually every day in Calabria. Every day at lunchtime, everyone disappears and they're with their family having lunch. And then they, you know, of course, they take a nap after that, too. Especially now where I am now, it's not the high season where everyone comes to the sea. So my development is extremely quiet. But it's still lunchtime. It's just like a ghost town.
For me, my family's not here. I have some relatives 3 hours away, but, you know, I'm not going to see them for lunch every day, you know.
And Becky, I know from our interview, you grew up in the movies and stuff. You grew up with a very close-knit family, and I love this. You got to make wine with Grandpa.
Yeah, we did get to make wine with Grandpa. And when you're talking about family, a couple of things I had written down was, and this goes with the relatives you saw in that part of the movie of winemaking. That's my father's side of the family. They are from Sicily, and my mother's side is from a little town, Carovigli, on the mainland. But what was interesting about that family and the experience of winemaking, though, for them, one of the things was from that family to learn loyalty. And I really mean it that way, because my dad used to talk about how when he was younger, sometimes when he got perturbed, I'm one of five, so when he got perturbed with us, he'd remind us that when he was young, he had to kiss his father's ring. And that was just part of being respectful and loyal. And his half-brothers treated him as he was the head of the family. He was the oldest, but they treated him in a way like a don. So it was a very different kind of culture to be with those relatives. And then on my mom's side, a bit different kind of context. And they only were like, I think you can walk, it's a mile and a half from each other from Akron, Ohio. So they were on North Hill and not very far from each other. And but that idea of there was, but for both, I think that sense of resilience because of the hardships they each had experienced, we learned. And as people have mentioned, the work ethic as well, in terms of those family experiences.
Do you notice a difference from one side to the other? Because my dad grew up as one of seven children. Both of his parents were from Italy, whereas my mom's mother was born immigrants who had recently arrived. And then my maternal grandfather came as a baby. He was a child. But my dad grew up with parents that were like 20 when they came to America. And, you know, they were poor. My grandfather died. My grandmother remarried. But they were wearing hand-me-downs. They were poor. My dad worked. I think I told Bob in the interview I did with, so my dad definitely gave us this different type of worth. I mean, of course, my mom's family all worked and are educated and stuff. But I really learned a lot, like, from my dad always talking about how we had nothing. We were poor. We had to work as children. And, of course, as a child, I was like, what? Are you kidding? Like, you know, now I realize, you know, my dad became a fire chief on the FDNY and, you know, worked for 40 years. Again, he could have retired after 20, but he kept working. And one thing my dad always told me about, like, you know, don't call in sick unless you're dying. Don't be late. You know, don't ever be late. Oh, my God, you're late. What? Like, you know, a lot of these things that you did. But that's because they had to, him and all his brothers had to, like, you know, really work for everything they have. So they were very serious about work. And my grandfather, when he was alive, also had, you know, several jobs.
And Carla has an interesting story about that, too, because your great-great-grandfather started the construction business, right? In New York City. And I know from the story, you could tell it better than me, he instilled a lot of ethic into everybody, right?
We'll be right back.
Italian Roots and Genealogy is proudly sponsored by Your Dolce Vita and Dawn Matera, connecting people to their purpose in life and continuing their legacy. For more information, contact Dawn at www.yourdolcevita.com.
Well, you know, I don't know if their work ethic passed this far down. You know, they came to the New World. They were poor. And it was survival. I don't know if their work ethic at the turn of the 20th century passed this far forward to my generation, quite the same, the degree that they had. However, you know, I've come to my Italian-American heritage sort of later in life. I didn't have a lot of these things instilled in me as a child, but they're things that I've come to appreciate as an adult. Learning about my ancestors and understanding the environments and families my parents grew up in. My dad is very driven, very success oriented. And he was also put on a pedestal as a child in his family. And he lived with the generations and, They waited till he walked in the door before anybody could take a bite of food. You know, he was the first one who went to college. He became a doctor. But I think that he thought that's just how families were. I don't think he realized the intention that was behind it, you know, that everybody made an effort. It wasn't just automatic. Mm-hmm. So I think when my dad moved away from Auburn, New York, where he grew up, and transplanted into North Carolina, there wasn't that family structure. So that's not something we really grew up with. And I think he was a little bit mystified that it was just going to somehow blossom around him. He didn't realize how much work and intention went into creating that atmosphere. And I think that that's something that was sadly lost in the generations. And, you know, as far as the women in the family, talk about work ethic, I think I come from a lineage of women who like to keep really clean houses. And that takes a lot of work. And I realize as an adult that that's just not automatic. You know, that's something that's like in our DNA. And it's something that as an adult, I appreciate.
All right. Well, I'm going to turn over the hosting to a great podcast, to Frank DiPiero. So, Frank, I'm going to throw up a question there for you.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Fun question. This is a fun question.
Okay. let's see. Rich, what was your favorite Italian dish growing up?
So, I kind of remember what it looked like, and it was polenta. It was basically cornmeal. At first, you know, it didn't impress me, but today it's like a gourmet dish. And it was just a cornmeal, and I'll call it with some gravy, but it was red sauce, marinara sauce on it. But it was a heartwarming dish, and that's something that stuck with me.
Okay, Steve, what was yours?
So I'm gonna tell you a quick funny thing here. My grandmother used to cook things, and she would call them by names that I'm not sure if it's an Italian or whatever it is. So she would cook something called cavatelle. She would say, oh, cavatelle.
Cavatelle.
And I think we call it gnocchi now.
Gnocchi, that's right. No, cavatelle. Yes.
Yeah. But it's like gnocchi. So she would make them.
It's gnocchi.
Yeah. Okay, but she would call it cavatelle. And when her father came over, he didn't speak any English. So I found out later she had to have been fluent very early in Italian. So a lot of her Italian kind of morphed, because she would say words that later on I realized it was either Italian or kind of a very interesting dialect. But her father died fairly, I think maybe she was like 19. So obviously she didn't have a need necessarily to speak Italian. So then she would say these words that I think, you know, it's like a lot of people when you grow up, the second generation, first generation, they kind of morph the pure Italian to something else. So cavatelle was what we would probably call gnocchi, and she would make them, you know, with the thumb, and you know, take the little bit of dough, whatever, and she'd thumb them and put them on the tray. Yeah. And I still remember those, and they were good. And I think between those and one other thing she made fresh around Easter, she called it pizzelles. You guys know
I make them all the time.
Right. So those are my two favorite things that I really miss.
Okay.
And great. I mean really miss.
Claudio, what was your favorite Calabrese dish growing up?
You know, my mom was a fantastic cook, and everything she made was good. For the holidays, fried broccoli with garlic. I make it to this day, when you smell it, it brings back the holidays, the bacala and all that stuff. And of course, the spaghetti and meatballs and all that. But we used to make 300 pounds of Italian sausage every year. Mm-hmm. And what we used to do was, obviously, the sausage was great, right? But we would also make something called salimoto, which is basically fried fat with remnants of meat, right? So my mom would give me a couple pieces of the fried sausage, a couple tablespoons of the salimoto, and a piece of bread the size of a wall. And I said, "Mom, give me a little bit more than salimoto." She said, "This stuff will kill you. It's, you know, it's fried fat." So good. And I remember my dad told his cardiologist that we had that. His eyes got big. And then my dad brought him some. He said, "Man, this is good, but this is why you're here." But really, everything my mom used to make, you know, when I was in Italy, she made a pie for every day I was gone, you know, and they were all good. And the cream puffs and the sausage, just everything. For me to name one, you know, it wouldn't do her justice. And I try to make a lot of those things that she made, but everything my mom, my mom could have cooked a broom and it would have been good.
Very nice. Becky, how about you?
Well, some things have been mentioned, but my mom was also a wonderful cook as well. And so for us, for especially our childhood, she'd make homemade noodles. And of course, she'd do it during the day when we were in school, but they'd be drying on the dining room table. And so she had to keep us, because we'd eat all the raw noodles from, we thought that was great. But again, that with homemade sauce and everything, and ravioli, she would make by hand as well. And that was always terrific. And then sometimes she would dip into her past peasanthood while she made pizza, which we had at home. On occasion, if she had made bread, she would set a little aside, and we'd have what was called poor man's pizza, which was mostly bread with olive oil, salt, and pepper. And then that would be served along with something else for dinner. So those were all sort of those poor man's pizza. Comfort foods.
Almost like focaccia, yeah.
Yeah, almost.
Carla, how about you?
My mother is an excellent cook, so I had a lot of great food as a child. But she did identify more with her German ancestry than her Italian. She was a quarter Italian. And but she did make linguine and clams a lot. Mm. And so we loved that as a child. That was really good.
I'm getting very hungry now. Bob Sorrentino, how about you?
Easy. Uncle Frank's homemade ravioli. Mm. He had the board. He had that big dowel. He could roll out a piece of pasta the size of the table and knock out, you know, a dozen or 12 dozen ravioli in, you know, like an hour or something like that. So definitely my favorite.
Nice. Diana?
Oh, gosh, I've been dying to answer this question. So it's really hard because I have favorites on both sides. So, but my mom is an excellent cook, and my mom and my grandmother's all made great things. My mom tried to incorporate also my dad's, my paternal grandmother's recipes from Bari into things we ate at home all the time. So my favorite thing now and also growing up was, we called it Bari's pizza, but it's actually like a stuffed focaccia, which has, and they still make it over there too in Bari. It's got olives, onions, anchovy and olive oil, and it's stuffed, so it's got two layers, and it is fantastic. So I made it for my uncles. We had a family reunion, as we going in my grandmother's tradition, having a family reunion, and my dad and all my uncles tried it, and they were like, yeah, thumbs up, just like mom made it. And we were like, they were like, oh, mom, you made it like mama. And they were like, they almost made me cry because they were so happy. I have a picture of them holding it up. But you know, there was that. My mom always made homemade pizza, like a clam pie, a veggie pie, an onion pie, whatever. And all the desserts, I basically had like all the desserts from Naples, like migliaccio, struffoli at Christmas. And on my dad's side, they're different kind of desserts. I don't know if anyone knows carte latte. They're like, they look like roses. My grandma put the vincotto inside or honey. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to choose, but I'd say the Bari's pizza, which is not really pizza, but she called it Bari's pizza. And secondarily, the migliaccio, because when my mom would make it, she had to stop making it because we would all eat it like in one day. And she's like, I can't. I think we all gained like 20 pounds from eating the migliaccio all the time. But of course, we use the Neapolitan dialect word. We didn't use the Italian words for all these things. And Easter bread. We were in the newspaper for our Easter bread, which is paloma in the Neapolitan dialect, but colomba in Italian. And I really like all those things, but I think the pizza is the best.
Okay, very good. Daniel, how about you?
So much good food. My town was full of all the old country recipes. My whole town was pretty much run by Italians. My mother made a fantastic sauce. My grandmother, the sweet stuff, you know, my grandmother would do the pizza fritta, just fry the dough, pull it out and put it all full of sugar. The pastry shops were incredible. The pasta chot and some relatives would make the cassade, which is a Sicilian and maybe up by Naples or Salerno in that area. So a lot of more local Calabrian recipes, which, you know, any food here and sauce here is just as good, or, you know, as back home in New York. But yeah, so many good foods. It's hard to pick one.
Yeah, it's impossible.
I would say for me, lasagna was like, it was like a treat.
Oh, I noticed somebody.
I got a lasagna,
Yeah, somebody just put up a comment. Anyone have pizza free? That's the one I was talking about. It was just she'd make the dough into a floppy, ugly looking donut, throw it in the oil, pull it out, and put sugar on it, and then she would send us kids away running, you know.
Did they put raisins in it?
No, she never put raisins in it. That sounds
my grandma used to put raisins in it. She put raisins in the dough. And then she would fry it, and then we would, like you said, sprinkle the sugar on it. Again, the funny thing on the dialect, we called them pizza frites. You know, it's just a little dialect the way they chew the words.
You don't pronounce the last letter. It's a schwa, so of course it's going to sound different. Yeah.
I put up another question for you, Frank. So,
okay, how connected do you feel with Italy, Italian American culture, growing up? Let's start with Deanna.
Oh, okay. This was the question I was thinking of the other day, as opposed to how did you feel growing up? How do you feel now? It's interesting. Living in Italy, they try to make me feel more American. And of course, I'm not an Italian native, but I always felt Italian American. And in fact, even my cousins, they were on a trip when we all felt this way, all the cousins. I have like 30 cousins on my dad's side. My cousin was going on a cruise. And they asked her, like, where are you from? And she said, I'm Italian. And they're like, well, why is your passport American? And it's funny because I was thinking back to how I always said, I'm Italian. What are you? Because in New York, we say, what are you? Oh, I'm Italian. What are you? I'm Irish. You know, I'm this, I'm that. And obviously, we know most of the people are also American. So it was strange to me moving to Italy, how they almost are like, oh, but you already say Americana, like you're American. I'm like, no, but you don't understand. I didn't grow up. Yes, I grew up American, but I'm saying we grew up Italian-American 100%. Like going to my grandma's every Sunday, you know, having the family reunions, you know, just always being really close with the cousins, so and all the relatives and aunts and uncles, that I definitely felt really connected as Italian American. I didn't know that much about Italy as a child. I never went as a child. My grandparents would go on their own. You know, my mom and dad went on their vacations there and stuff like that before we were born. And I would say we knew the history, but we felt Italian American. And I think living in Italy has definitely changed me that, you know, I always grew up with more of a Neapolitan mindset and a Neapolitan culture as far as food and traditions, because like the presepe, you know, at Christmas, the nativity, we had that and we had all the recipes from Naples. And I always identified with my mom's side a little bit more because my mom's mother lived on Staten Island and my dad's parents lived in Brooklyn. So we saw them less. So, but I definitely felt Italian American. And it's funny how here, sometimes in Italy, they might try to take that away from the Italian part away from you, because I don't think they understand. And it's not everybody, it's just certain people. They just don't understand. Oh, but you're American. Like, you know, do you put ketchup on spaghetti? And I'm like, are you serious?
Yes, I've asked that question too. That's how you Americans, make your sauce with ketchup.
Nah, you know, so like,
some probably do, but we don't.
Well, thank you. Let's stick with the ones in Italy. Daniel, how about you growing up? Was it your Italian-American?
Yeah, I did have this question, so I looked at it yesterday. I wrote that, I felt a slight connection when we were visiting relatives. Some were not born in the United States. And I did feel a little connected to the culture because, you know, everyone in my town, like I said before, was Italian. I mean, there was a lot of Polish and Irish, too, but I never really saw them growing up because all my parents' friends were Italian. There was a few Jewish friends or, you know, a few, but mostly it was all Italian. I mean, the entire city was run by Italians, basically. You know, they ran the government. But they were all mostly first and second generations. So I felt a slight connection, but, I mean, I loved America, of course. I mean, who wouldn't? Born in 1957, it was such a great time to be a kid in America, you know. Now I feel a lot more connected. I mean, I come here where my grandparents came from. I mean, many times it's very emotional to get your feet on the soil here where they came from, to know how they lived and how they dreamed of when they heard about a place called America, how they worked to get up to Naples, to get on that boat. So it's really wonderful coming here, and you get a I recommend it to everyone that I know. In fact, when I walk around this town, they all look like they're from my town. And I tell my brother that when you get here, you're gonna see these people, and they look like they're all from Utica, New York. Well, I've got a lot of relatives here too, and they're like, "Oh, you're the family that went." You know, my uncle's, let's see, my grandfather's brother. You know, he had a family. He came and then went back and never went back to the United States. So they're here, and since I've met them, they've made me feel much more connected. And that's both my mother's side, my father's side. I've got 90%. I did the DNA test and all that. So anyways, many people in this Italian town, you know, tell me that they have family in the town that I grew up in. Oh, you're from there? Oh, I got a cousin that was there. So there's a huge connection. In fact, there was a guild in my hometown for this town. That's how connected they were. So anyways, so I'm very connected now that I've come here.
Oh, I'm sure. You can't help but be connected when you're in Italy. That's for sure.
Yeah.
We have a question from Mary. Last time I was in Italy and we spoke in Italian, people would say Americani. Guess they could tell. I mean, my opinion, you could, if you grew up in Italy and you came and you lived there till you were 20 and then you moved to America and then you go back 7-8 years later, they're going to call you the American.
Yeah.
Once you're gone, you're the American.
You know what stuck out to me more than anything else when I was there? I'm not Sorrentino there. I'm Sorrentino.
See?
Yeah, you have to say your name correctly.
Correct. So thank you.
They say Oliveri. They're like, huh? What?
So, Rich, how about you? How about your feelings on this?
So it's funny that later in life I realized how Italian I was. My high school yearbook, 90% Italian last names. Di Lorenzo, Russo, Nocella. Common, meaning I didn't realize how Italian I was, right? When I would go to my grandmother's house and I'd see her shrine or her bureau with pictures from the old country, you know, who are these people? I don't know, but there's that shrine, right?
And Jesus,
I go to my aunt's house, I see the fig tree. You know, what's this fig tree all about? You know, it's the old country, right?
Yeah. We had
like I said, it wasn't till later in life and when I made that trek to the ancestral village where your heart gets warm and you connect with those roots, let's say, and it all just bubbles up, so to speak. And as I reflect, now I see, okay, now matriarch, because my grandfather had passed. It's all about her, taking care of her. She's at the head of the table. I'm at the kids' table with my cousins. So once again, later in life where you reflect and then you say to yourself, geez, I'm entitled to dual citizenship. How did I didn't know that 50 years ago, right? When I look at my dad's birth certificate and it says his parents were born in Italy. I mean, it's overwhelming, quite frankly, on how Italian-American that we all are when you can trace your roots. And I've actually had like arguments with some of my cousins like, well, you're a second generation. I said, no, I'm kind of a third generation, you know. I've asked different people. And the truth of the matter is the foreign-born that naturalized here are considered the first generation because they have that hybrid Italian-American. My parents are second, and then I'm third generation. And
yeah,
I'm
there's always schools of thoughts on that.
So I agree, Deanna. But, yes, like I said, later in life, the reflection, but It all those visuals that I remember, you know, going to the festivals, going to my dad taking me to his social club. You know, I was the little kid. I was the little bambino, but he was proud to take me in there. And, you know, everybody was family, but they weren't family. They were just the neighbors, right? But they shared in our heritage. And what else can you say?
Right. Well,
thanks, Rich. So let's turn it over to another great podcast host, Steve Mancini. So, Steve, take it away. I put a question up there for you.
I thought you said great podcast host.
You have the perfect I don't have a podcast voice. You have a podcast voice.
No, I appreciate that. So I tell you what, I do want to make one comment to Mary. Mary, I'll tell you, they know you're American, but what I've learned is keep speaking Italian as much as possible when you're in Italy. They do appreciate it. They really do. Most Americans go to these foreign countries and they figure, oh, everybody speaks English, so I don't have to try. When you go overseas, you know, you should make the effort to speak the language. So you just keep doing it. They might call you American, but I tell you what, they do appreciate it. That was the one thing I learned.
Yeah.
If the person wants to speak English with you, you keep pushing and you keep speaking Italian.
That's right.
I'm fluent in Italian. And so is my friend. And we were in Florence 2 weeks ago. And the girl kept smirking and thinking it was funny that we spoke Italian. And, you know, we were like, we're not going to speak English with this girl. We're going to keep going in Italian.
Trying to practice their English. So I give them, exactly. I try and make, yeah, like, give them the benefit of the doubt.
That's true.
And by the way, Lucrecia, you said something about greens and beans. I'll tell you one thing. I think maybe you guys can tell me if this is some Italian dish that's called something else. But my grandmother, I think it was Becky, you mentioned, or maybe it was Carla, you mentioned the old-fashioned cranking out the noodles. Well, my grandmother used to crank out the flat noodles, dry them, and then cook them with beans, like not green beans, but with like almost like beans out of the can. And we call it, you know, either be spaghetti and beans or the noodles and beans. I don't know if that's some dish that they made up here or what, but it was delicious. And again,
one of those. That's the pasta fazool.
That's what I write.
All right. Because Italian. Same.
We're going to get to the questions or Bob's going to mute me. So, all right, I'm going to ask Becky, you've been too quiet. So what makes you or made you proud to be part of the Italian, family in general? Obviously, you're here, so you must love it.
Well, part of that love, obviously, is rooted in family, as well with having my dad was born here. So we think of him as first generation, and my mom immigrated here. And I found this question difficult, too, because I don't think about pride in being proud in the same way, but I think that what I could say is once each family came here to the United States in the early somewhere around 1919 and 1920, how much each generation has found a way to realize for themselves what they felt the American dream is, and then how that gets passed along. This probably is more on my mom's side, that one of the things that came down that might have been part of work and ethics that we were talking about, but translated into what some of us have done in our lives, is a lot of service back to the community and taking care of community. And I think some of that started within the family, helping each other and all. And then where I'm from, the North Hill area of Akron sort of was at the time an Italian enclave of in terms of population. And so you had a sense of that. And so I think in terms of pride is how much that's spread out through us over time. And then it's interesting to see the iteration from each generation. And now as I look at my nieces and nephews, what they're doing with their lives and how that might be yet an extension of things that happened because family came.
Oh, great answer.
Yeah.
Carla, how about your turn? What makes you proud to be part of the Italian family?
To be honest, I think I'd be proud of whatever I am, but I am predominantly Italian. My dad is 100% Italian, my mom a quarter. My dad is Capiello, and I felt very Italian growing up because I had to spell my last name all the time and pronounce it for people. In my mom's family, the Paterno family, has just a really great story with a lot of documentation. And so I feel pride on both sides of my family. I love Italy. I love a lot of things, but Italy is easy to love. And the design aesthetic, everybody's got something great about their country and a lot to be proud of. And I'm glad to be proud of this one. And like I said before, I've come to this kind of late in life. Other than, you know, going by Carla Capiello my entire childhood, there wasn't a whole lot of Italian heritage infused in my childhood. But now as an adult and having done research and pieced back together my Paterno family's history, I just stand in awe of what they were able to accomplish. I try to put myself in their shoes, and I just hope that I would have had the fortitude and the determination that they had to create this building empire. And I feel like, you know, I play a role in that story, in the reassembly and the preservation of their story, because much of it has been lost to time. Mm-hmm. And I can at least steward that, and hopefully it will be, it won't get lost again to time. And I can honor my ancestors that way. And that makes me feel part of their story, and something to be very, very proud of. And I am going for my dual citizenship. Interestingly, even though my Paterno family has such a powerful, big story, it's through my Capiello lineage that I qualify for dual citizenship. So I love the balance there. Sides of my family have given
the irony, right?
right.
By the way, you did make a comment though, and it kind of a very important one that I think this shows why there is such a disconnect depending on what generation you're in. I'm very similar to you. Things weren't consciously infused. You are Italian American. You are Italian. Never forget the family. It was something. There was just things just were what they were because you were closer to the generation that immigrated here. Then there is a break, and where people became American, and now you've got this kind of skipped a generation almost, and now we're all looking back, going, "Ooh, I want to reconnect to my roots," but we're kind of having to make up for lost time. And so your story, I suspect, is very similar to a lot of folks. Daniel, I'm going to ask you the question. Yeah. What makes you proud to be part of the Italian family?
Off the top of my head, they just seem like happy people, a simple approach to life's problems. Of course, I'm proud of the food that we've given to the world. And, you know, there's a lot of sincerity, just pragmatic people, tenacious. I mean, just what we've given to the world as Italians through art and engineering and just the history. Those are the things I'd be proud of in terms of the attitude that they seem to approach problems with. And they're pretty resilient. And I just, after coming here as well, good people who are, you know, they just quite pragmatic and just get to the heart of the situation. And not really holding any grudges, and let's just, you know, get past this problem we might have. So, and the ability to adapt and change.
All right, Claudio, I'm going to give you a shot at this because I know you're proud to be Italian. You're my co-host.
What Dennis, given this world is unbelievable. Although my family, we do hold grudges, but that's not
zero. Real Italians do, Claudio.
My mom and dad from day one, all I heard was Marciano Graziano, Giorgio Canalia, and Mario Lanza and Carlo Butti. And then not only that, but whenever we would watch a TV show, my dad would see a director or a writer. Oh, that guy's Italian. The producer, that guy's Italian. And so that was instilled in me from the day of reasoning. Okay. Then later on as an adult, obviously I do that with my daughter. And, a month ago, I was lucky enough to be invited to the Italian Sports Hall of Fame in Chicago. And all of the great speeches, all of the great acknowledgments, you know, Steve, and when he on our show, Steve said this, and some other guests said when they went to Italy, they felt home and something kind of hit them. But yeah, when I went to that banquet and all these great comments about being Italian and their families and the strength and the discipline and the hard work and the ethics and the closeness, it just hit me like an avalanche. And that was my, I don't know, it hit me. Not that it ever left me, but it just popped up that much more. Mm-hmm. And finally, my daughter, when she was younger, she went to a friend's house for dinner. And she noticed how quiet it was, how there was no scent in the air of the food. There was really no talking. There was no nothing. And we're not like that. You know, we'll save that for when we're dead. We talk, you know, and something else. You know, my mom used to always say, never speak from the neck up, speak from the heart up. And that's what we do. We speak from the heart up. And so I'm extremely proud and to be Italian. And what Daniel said, what we've contributed, everybody's contributed something. Maybe I'm being a little biased, but when you start going over the Da Vinci's, the Michelangelo's, and the Sinatra's, and the Valvano's, and the Marciano's, and you can go on and on in politics and written and whatever. You can see our hand in religion, in the medical field, in science. We science didn't do too bad. Year?
Yeah,
we didn't do too bad. Yeah, great Lombardi. Time.
Oh, that's right. That's right, well, Claudio.
Great minds,
Daniel.
Here in Calabria, great minds here in Calabria. I mean, it's a huge, Sicily and Calabria were the original Italy, you know, and we had a huge influence from the Greeks.
I'm glad he froze on that after he said the Greeks.
Mute Daniel, please. Let's mute him.
It's an Italian show.
That's right. He's talking about the Greco, Madonna. Frankie D, I want to ask you this question, though. Frankie, I want to ask you this question because you've been hosting a great podcast. You and Bob have fantastic podcasts, and you've been dedicated to, you know, continuing to educate people, to bring people in, to celebrate Italian culture. Frankie, what makes you so proud of the culture of the Italian family in general?
Well, thank you. I'd have to say, kind of like Claudio, Diana, I mean, growing up, somebody said, "What are you?" I was Italian. I mean,
we all did that. Didn't understand what that meant.
No, I kind of did. I mean, what I'm getting at is like it was very prevalent. I lived in a very Italian neighborhood, and everybody we knew was Italian, and all the friends of the family were Italian, and our doctor, our lawyer, our accountant, the barber, you name it, the dentist. I'm not kidding. Everybody was nice. So that was like all I knew, and I was always very proud, and that was instilled in me. And like Claudia said, you're watching TV, and you know, that actor's Italian or that coach was Italian, and you just kind of innately rooted for them. You know what I mean? It was this pride of our people and, not being biased, but like, I feel like we have contributed just an unbelievable amount to the world. You know, if I could say it without, without being wrong, more than the others. Okay. And, I'm proud of that. I don't really do it.
That's and, nice. No, you can say it. You can say it, Frankie.
I'm
say
it,
we're right.
And we need to instill that. And that's why Bob was saying earlier, I do these Italian-American moments. And I'm always trying to do things, videos, small things so these younger people, because we're not going to be here forever, okay? And they got to understand what it's really about. And they got to go beyond the logical, the stereotypical things, okay, because it's so much deeper than that, and that's what I really, I yearn for. I really hope that they buy into that and they do understand. And the best way to understand Italians and all that, go to Italy. I mean, I agree with whoever said that earlier. Take a trip to Italy. You got to go to Italy. That's number one.
You got to go to the hometown. Just go to Rome
once. That's right. At least once.
Real quick.
By the way, Bob, I do want to give you the last word on this question. But Frankie, you said something, and Deanna, you said the same thing. You grew up, and they say, "Oh, what are you? I'm Italian." But then you go to Italy, and they say you're American. So when we're in the States and we say you're Italian, I do think we don't. My opinion is, I think when you say I'm Italian, like what does that really mean?
I don't say that anymore.
Italian, right.
Now I say Italian American.
Right.
Yeah. Up until 19, when I went to Italy, I said Italian. Coming
That's
back.
That's right. Then you go to Italy, then you come back and you realize I'm Italian American.
I'm Italian American. I'm an Italian American. I'm Italian origin. I mean, I get that. And one other thing I just wanted to throw out there, because you mentioned that Rocky and all that. And true story, real quick, I think I was about 9 when the movie came out, and there was this movie theater. It was around Grand and Harlem in Chicago in the neighborhood. And I was taken to see the movie. And when I tell you, the boxing scenes at the end, Everybody in the movie theater was Italian. Everybody was screaming. I'm this 9-year-old kid. It was almost intimidating, but everyone's screaming like we're an actual boxing match. It's a movie. And I left the movie ready to just, I would have run through a brick wall for being Italian. So
that's, and they're still trying to hope he's going to win Rocky One, but unfortunately, folks, we can't change the ending. Bob, I want to give you the last shot at this one. What makes you proud? Because again, you have a wonderful show. You know, you've been doing a lot of research over the years and helping people to do the research. Obviously, you're proud of this. What makes you so proud of this?
I think a couple of things. I think mainly, you know, growing up with that family, and I'm sure, you know, every culture has their family and they're growing up. But there's, to me, there's something special about that closeness. And you know, being surrounded with, you know, cousins that were like brothers, aunts and uncles that were like parents. It was just kind of a special thing. But also, and somebody mentioned that, I think, when we first started about heroes and things like that. Especially when you go back and you see the terrain, you see that in my case, my grandparents who came in 1915, you see that journey was not easy. You know, they came across a country, some of them in, you know, on donkeys to go to Naples to take a boat for 14 days to get here. I don't know if I could do it, to be honest with you.
And there was no keeping in touch. You were, you know.
No. And yeah.
Yeah.
And to that point, you know, when I got back and I got the photo that my grandmother sent to her father saying, from your dear daughter to my dear father, so you never forget. She knew she was probably never going to talk to him again.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Now when people come and you go someplace, you go there, everybody's got a phone and everybody's talking. So I think it's just that kind of special force or whatever it was that drove them here through all the hardships. And, you know, when some of our people came, they had already heard stories about how hard it was to get there, and they came anyway. So I think that's it. But let's turn the last question over to Claudio. And I think this might be a fun and simple one.
Hey, what is your fondest memory growing up? What is your fondest memory growing up? If I can go, well, go ahead, Steve.
You know, it's funny. It's not so much a memory as it is something that happened every single year. And it was something, and it's something I still do to this day. It is the Christmas Eve get together when everyone is in the house together. It is one of the few times of the year where you literally have all of your cousins, your aunt, your uncle, you know, whomever, brothers, yeah, sisters, nephews, we are all, yes, in the house together. It is a madhouse.
Special.
When I moved back here to Pittsburgh, after I retired from the military, I moved back to Pittsburgh. That was the one thing, because my gram had just recently passed away. Or yeah, she just kind of was in the home and before she passed away. And I said, I'm going to keep doing that. And it's the same people that are still alive that come to my house for Christmas Eve. And my wife goes crazy. Wow, we got all these people. But it's the same. At the end of the day, we love it. We love it because it's just the one time where everybody's screaming and shouting, and they're not necessarily angry screaming and shouting, which for the people listening, I want to make something very clear. Just because we're yelling doesn't mean we're angry. So like I said before the show, whoever screams the loudest gets heard. So there's this ratchet it up. So the house is just, you know, it sounds like we're at the Super Bowl, and it's like all we're doing is asking to pass the, you know, pass the spaghetti. But to this day, my fondest memory is truly Christmas Eve. Every Christmas Eve when everybody came over for a good reason, and I still do that to this day. And I invite the same people come over, and whoever's alive, or just not grown up, moved out of the area, we all get together every, wow, Christmas Eve. I still love it. I still miss it, and I'll still keep going. God willing.
Yeah, that's great.
That's Ralph. Deanna.
Oh, my fondest memory growing up is making Easter bread with my mom, my grandmothers, and all my aunts and cousins, all the female aunts and cousins. All the female cousins and aunts. And basically, we would make ridiculous amounts of Easter bread, like 65 loaves. My mom would hand it out to the neighborhood. Everyone just mailed it to Florida, wherever. Like, we just went crazy. And we were actually on the cover of the Staten Island Advance in 2001, but we've been, had been making it. It was my great grandmother's recipe, and my grandmother still made it in America. And yeah, we'd make like tons of it, and it's just like tons of eggs and mixing and everything. And I'm not a baker. I don't like to cook either. But I love that. That was my favorite thing. And then of course, having to wait for Easter morning to eat it was like torture. But my mother was like, you can't touch it till Easter morning. You know, it's like, come on, why are you doing this to us? You know, but we love that. And it's my one thing, because we all came together, usually, a Good Friday or Holy Thursday, if we went to Stations of the Cross, we would start doing it after, and you know, till like 1 a.m, you know, which is a really good, and we still do it, and we're teaching the younger generations to do it as well.
Philly Ritt.
So it's basically what I said earlier. You know, when my dad would take me to my grandmother's, the first thing she would do is grab my hand and put that dollar in my hand, hold my hand like and never let me go. Oh. And then later in the day, when it was Sunday dinner, like it is here, sitting at that kid's table with my cousins while the grown-ups were in the other room, and just instilled a lot of familia with me. So, but that clutch of her hand and that dollar bill, I wish I can do that again today with her.
Did you get it on the way out or the way in? Because I got it on the way out the door.
Oh, on the way in.
On the way in. I guess it's easier to be spotted by the parents.
Carla.
Am I back?
You are.
Yeah.
Okay. My top fondest memory has nothing to do with being Italian, but my most favorite memory from childhood that is very Italian is when my father, Capiello, took me back to where he grew up in Auburn, New York. And it was the multi-generational small town experience. And it was so enchanted by it because it was so different than how I grew up in Florida and North Carolina. And I'm just so glad I got to meet my great grandmother who lived to be 106. And so there were four generations around a table. And I'm just so thankful that he got around to doing that, just so that we could experience that once in our lifetime, because it was so different. And it was like going back in time. And I knew even as a child that something was very special about having all those generations around one table, eating everything that was made from scratch in that house in the basement kitchen. It was, didn't know it then, but I know it now how incredibly special that was.
The basement is the most important part. My grandmother had the family reunion in the basement, despite the fact that she had this beautiful upstairs. So it just reminded me of that.
Building a little bit off of what Rich said about Christmas Eve, that was my family hosted, and it was not unusual for us to have 50 plus people in the house and everything. It was wonderful. But to kind of build on that theme, for my mom, because when she immigrated here, they had a very interesting, very first Christmas. And we would make her tell us that story over and over again. And one of the things she did with us is she'd always save something from Christmas Day instead of getting everything under the tree. And so when La Befana came on the 6th, she'd have something for us. So usually, of course, it was a school day. So when we came home, there was a little something for us to kind of have a bit of a taste of something special on that day as well. And then with her very special Christmas story, for Inside the Family, we published a little book that we gave to all of our family members about her and my aunts, who I told you had just turned 100. About their very first Christmas here in the United States.
That's sweet.
I put the picture up behind me. Grandma's backyard. There was nothing like it. Her birthday was late August and just before school started. And all my cousins, all my aunts and uncles, there'd be 100 people in her yard. Just, you know, you'd start eating when you get there. And you'd be walking out with a sandwich on your way out.
Just in case.
Just in case, you know, my uncles would be at the barbecue from, you know, morning to night. And I think what amazes me more about that time, now we're talking, you know, 1959, 1960, 61, the food that came out of that tiny little kitchen, 100 degrees, you know, 5-10 pounds of pasta. Well, we didn't call it pasta. We called it macaroni. Nobody said pasta back then.
Yeah.
But certainly that was it. And that's my grandmother back there in the picture, my mother's mom. And she was just, she lived for her grandchildren. That's all she cared about.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Wonderful.
Frank.
Well, a very fond memory besides the Rocky movie was we had the Feast of Our Lady of Mount Carmel. Mm-hmm. It was in Melrose Park, Illinois, right outside Chicago. Heavy populated Italian, but like everybody went to the feast. It was called The Feast. And it was such a great, I mean, when I was a kid, it was like 10 days and then it became 7 and then it became 4. And unfortunately, but back then it was popular. And I mean, thousands of people, everybody Italian. And it was just, it was a great memory. It really, you look forward to it, you know? So that was definitely a very fond memory growing up.
Dan, me? Oh, well, you know, again, I have to say, just growing up in the 50s and the early 60s in America, happened to be in central New York, upstate New York. It was just such a wonderful time. Just, you know, it was just playing in the street until, you know, it was too late and people calling you to come home. You know, just playing outside in the street because the streets were filled with kids. And then, you know, in the wintertime, playing in all the snow, it was such a good time. The neighborhoods were safe. And again, it was populated with Jewish and Polish and German and Irish and black and white and all kinds of people. So my memories, you know, of course, my best ones are when I was a kid, kind of. I've got good ones now, too, of course, because I got my own kids and my own grandkids. But I'm making new ones. But, yeah, it would have to be when I was a kid, just knowing that I could be free and I had no worries.
Yeah, and playing outside was different.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
my mom just chimed in. My mom just chimed in. Dan, we created a new memory. Oh, I fried the ribbons for Paige. Yeah.
That's right. Was her. That's so cute. As far as playing outside, I was thinking about when they would say, your parents would say, come in when the streetlights come on, you have to come inside. Like,
right,
you
don't
see nowadays. Like, what? Come in when the lights come on.
They don't go outside anymore.
I don't see the kids in the neighborhood, rarely.
No, not like right. We would ride our bikes and disappear for hours.
Oh, and just in case.
We didn't know where we were.
Well, just in case you weren't home with the streetlights, you either heard the loud whistle or the yell.
Yes. We have a home video of my mom screaming, calling me. She was building something up and looking for me at the same time. And I was like, oh, gosh, these are priceless.
I get to enjoy my childhood because my parents created an atmosphere for me to enjoy my childhood, number one. But number two, something that still we were lucky. We were friends with Chuck Knox, who's from our hometown here in Swickley, in Pittsburgh, and he was a football coach for the LA Rams, Buffalo Bills, Seattle Seahawks. Chuck was like an uncle to us, and we used to call him an honorary Italian. But anyway, we used to look forward to his games. That was my childhood. I mean, the Pirates and all that. But I knew a lot of the old Pirates, so that was special to me. But watching Chuck and the Rams from 73 to 77 was magical for us. And they were a great team. They didn't go all the way to the Super Bowl, but that was extremely special. I appreciate all of you so much. Continue to talk about our heritage. I know Steve and I do, and I'm extremely passionate about it. We still have a lot of young Italians out there doing special things, and I appreciate that.
All right, take care, Claudio.
Who knows what this is. Thank you all.
Oh, sorry. When I was talking about the last question, I forgot to say something important. And I don't know if you guys have done that, family had done this. My grandmother had this family reunion where she would go crazy around like the first of the year, maybe the second, first, like, you know, New Year's Day or the week after. And she would go crazy having this big party and inviting everybody, like in the whole entire family and the neighbors upstairs. There were people I thought were my cousins that were just neighbors. But, I don't know if you guys had that.
Oh, we had all kinds of strangers coming into the house. I mean, who's that?
Uncle, but okay. Yeah.
Hey, listen,
that was really, we have the home videos of it and I watched them over Christmas time. And I was like, that's another big thing besides the Easter making. I just wanted to mention it because I forgot.
No, that's great. And this has been certainly been a lot of fun. Before we go, Frank, you want to put a plug in? And Steve, you want to put a plug in for your shows?
Oh, well, thank you. So I could be heard at ItalianAmericanLife.com.
Frankie, you got to give them more than that, buddy, because it's a great show.
it is a super show.
No, and again, if you can catch Italian Impact Weekly, go out to our website, ItalianImpactWeekly.com. You can catch all of our shows on all the major streaming services. Just go to Italian Impact Weekly. You know, if you're on iHeart, iTunes, Spotify, just look Italian Impact Weekly. Or like I said, go out to the website, ItalianImpactWeekly.com. A lot of great guests. I think a few of the folks on this show have been on there. That should tell you, you know it's good because it's not just me. So thank you all very much.
All right, great, guys. Take care.